Hey, and welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Andy Kamenetsky, Brian Kamenetsky. Some final thoughts on the Lakers closing out the Warriors, plus what it could all mean for the Western Conference Finals against the Nuggets. That is next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everyone for listening to Locked On Lakers Monday through Friday, your team every day, always free. The show is never behind a paywall, and Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can watch the show, hang out with a community of almost 17,000 subscribers. It is always growing. We really appreciate that. The everydayers, the ones who listen, the ones who watch, or the ones who do both. Thank you as always. Also, let everyone know that today's show is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. That's prizepicks.com, promo code Locked On. Brian is working through injury right now.
Yes, somehow on during game four. No, I'm sorry, game five on Wednesday. I got sick. I felt awful all day on Wednesday, or at the end of the day on Wednesday. The Lakers, I think, felt my pain and played that way. By the end of Thursday, felt better. Super good Friday. We did our show Friday after the game when the Lakers clinched. Everything was fine. Saturday, right before I went to bed, voice totally went away. I assumed it was an early Mother's Day gift for my wife.
We press on.
It is... I keep thinking about where this team is, Andy, as we've, you know, finish up the Warriors series, get ready for the Denver series. And it occurs, it's just like they are in a place where I'm still not entirely sure if we understand what, even between now and the end of this series and maybe the end of a final series, what the top end looks like here. Because, you know, they took care of in, you know, six games, the two seed in the Western Conference. They turned around and took care of the Warriors, the defending champions, in six games in relatively easy order, I think. Like, they've performed incredibly well for a team that has not been together for very long.
No. I mean, we've that's one of the reasons why, I mean, we've said many times that we feel like, and at this point, I think it is just abundantly obvious that Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss should be looking to, you know, roll back as much of this roster as they possibly can, you know, because there's so many people who theoretically could end up walking in free agency. And
we're past the point, though, where we're like, do we want to do this or Kyrie? Like, they're no longer
not
thinking about Kyrie anymore in the front office, are they?
I would like to think they're not, but, you know, I will never put star effery past this franchise. It is in a lot of ways part of their ethos, regardless of how well run you think they are. It's just, you know, this is part of what would be their human nature. But to your point about, like, not knowing exactly what the top end is for the Lakers, how good they actually can be, because it's still a relatively small sample size. You know, it's now with two playoff series on top of it, it's the equivalent of about half a season that we've seen this group together. Much of it was without LeBron. So, you know, there's still that sense of mystery. But what I do feel confident about, even as somebody, I have not made up my mind yet, like a prediction who I think will win this series. I think the Lakers absolutely can. There's no question in my mind that they can win this series. I just think Denver's really good, and it's causing me just to think more as opposed to the other two series, Memphis and Golden State. I was very confident the Lakers both could win and would win. Like, they never really wavered. But one thing I'm absolutely positive about, these are the two best teams in the Western Conference. And I don't think it's even close, actually. Like, every now and then you see a conference finals where it doesn't feel like the best two teams in that conference are the ones representing. It's just things shake out weird, or there's an injury, or one team played inexplicably bad, one team got inexplicably hot. I think without question, the Lakers and the Nuggets are the two best teams in this conference, and that is why we are here right now.
I don't think there's any question that Denver is. You know, certainly with, yeah, there was like that week and a half period at the beginning of the season where we're all kind of like wondering what's wrong with the Nuggets, and then we stopped asking that question for most of the season. And they've got Jokic, obviously, and Jamal Murray, who's gotten generally better as the season's gone along, as he's gotten more healthy. Michael Porter Jr. and KCP has been a great fit with them. And, you know, just the good depth, really well coached. And I think they've been obviously the best team in the conference all year long. But the team that was supposed to be right behind them was Memphis. And the Lakers took care of that. By NBA playoff standards, relatively easily. And, you know, they benefit from injuries. That happens. There's no sure. question. But when you start to go forward with it, you know, certainly the Lakers were definitely a class better than Golden State. Golden State took care of the three seed. So, I mean, maybe it's a down year for the conference. And I think the Lakers, you know, got lucky in the sense that, you know, the door was held for them, you know, Hodor Game of Thrones style, for most of the season until they could finally make a move. But that's how it turned out. You know, every run in the playoffs, every good team, like you get a little bit of good fortune, and the Lakers are taking advantage of the good fortune that they got by the conference kind of cooperating in unusual ways all season long. And right now, I don't see how you would say, I agree with you. I don't see how you could look at them and say they're not, at worst, the second best team in the West.
It also feels too, and this is, I think, something that's really exciting, both for this team big picture, because again, I think they should be seriously considering trying to keep this group intact as much as they can, but also small picture for this upcoming series. We've seen a lot over these first two rounds of it's been a playoffs where these guys, you know, came into it having pushed through a lot of adversity as a group, because the Lakers had to really play at an extremely high level just to put themselves in the playoffs. You know, the biggest concern we had post deadline wasn't the quality of this team. You and I both immediately said this is a really good roster. Like on paper, this roster is very good. We just weren't sure there was enough runway for them to catch up. But then you look at like individual players, like Anthony Davis, for example, who, you know, always has that spotlight and microscope on him, and in certain ways fair, certain ways unfair. I'm sure at times people like you and me have contributed to this, hopefully in ways more often fair than not. But, you know, he had this monster game six on the heels of Barkley and Shaq and Stephen A and that whole BS, you know, with the game five concussion. I don't know if you saw this, by the way, too, but Jason Jones from The Athletic, friend of the show, caught up with Shaq and asked Shaq about his comments about whether or not he was making fun of AD and getting injured. And Shaq said, quote, "I ain't making fun of nobody. That's not what I do. But I do know you're not going to stop me from playing in that game six." And then later went on to add, "See why I walk funny? It's because I sucked it up. You see why my toes don't bend? Because I sucked it up." First of all, it's ironic for him to bring up toes, considering in 2003 he healed up on company time. Right. But secondly, again, I go back to my original point that I said in you know, my rant after leading into game six, after game five. You are mocking him. So just say you are mocking him. Everybody knows you are mocking him. Have the balls to say it. And then AD responded. D'Angelo Russell has, I think, overcome a lot of bad playoffs, whether with the Nets or with the Timberwolves. And, you know, those questions about whether he can perform in the playoffs, whether he's a liability, if yep. you know, defense would keep. D'Angelo has, his overall field goal percentages are like 10% higher than any series he had ever had leading into this year. He's had like one stinker per series, but for the most part, he's been fine. Occasionally gone through the roof. His defense hasn't been a problem. Austin Reeves pushed through that early fatigue as somebody who is not used to this. He's never done this before. This is different for someone like him. Like, we've just, it's been really.
I mean, I think the Reeves thing is fascinating. Just be like, the explanation is just so obvious. He broke it down. Like, it's more basketball than he's played at this level, at this intensity, ever. Mm-hmm. Last season wasn't close because the games weren't, he didn't have as big of a job to do. And the Lakers were essentially playing playoff games for the last 6.5 weeks of the season. So, I mean, the wall is real, folks. And Reeves ran into it, and he seems to have kind of maneuvered his way around it in one form or another.
Hell, Lonnie overcame being out of the rotation after the roster was reconfigured. And he earned his way back into the rotation by staying ready. And that was a lot of adversity in and of itself. So there's just a lot of character that we've seen with this team post-deadline and everything that it took to get to where we are right now. And that in and of itself makes you, or at least makes me, feel really good about this team heading to what I think is going to be a hard series against Denver.
I want to ask you a little bit more. I want to ask you a couple more questions about this. And then turn it, looking a little bit forward to the Denver series as to lineups. The Lakers went with three guards at the end of that, in game six against the Warriors. What you think they might do for game one, because playoff series, you never run the same lineups necessarily as the matchups change. So we'll get to all that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Prize Picks. And Laker fans, if you haven't signed up yet for Prize Picks, you're missing out on Daily Fantasy Made Easy and the 1 million Daily Superflex promotion. And every day of the NBA playoffs, including the finals, one Prize Picks user will win a chance at becoming a millionaire. One entry placed after 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time will be randomly selected each day. Whoever placed that entry will be given a 6-pick flex with the following payouts: 6 correct picks, $1 million; 5 correct picks, $80,000; 4 correct picks, $16,000. Full details can be found at prizepicks.com/million. You must opt in at this link to be eligible for the $1 million entry. And once you opt in, all you have to do is play the game like normal and you could be the lucky winner. PrizePicks has the best NBA DFS prop game on the market. More NBA props than any other DFS prop operator. Superstar players, bench players, just pick 2 to 6 players and whether they will notch more or less than the PrizePicks stats projections, and you can win up to 25 times your money. And PrizePicks offers projections on everything from MLB to NHL playoffs, cricket. Use the award-winning app, both the App Store and Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. Safe, fast withdrawals. Download the PrizePicks app or go to prizepicks.com. Sign up, play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. Again, don't forget that promo code Locked On at the sign up for the instant match. If you're not playing Prize Picks, you do not know what you're missing.
So one of the things that we learned this weekend was that for all the bubble haters out there, for the bubble minimizers out there, the Final Four in 2023 is exactly the same as it was in 2020. So it's Lakers versus Denver. It's Miami versus Boston. And, from a Lakers standpoint, none of these teams are, no team is exactly the same 3 years later. The Lakers are radically different. Lakers are Anthony Davis and LeBron James are the only remaining players from that team. And so, it's kind of an interesting little piece of serendipity. But when you look at the kind of the DNA that goes through it in terms of reaching that top end, how much can you pull from the 2020 run? Because obviously not everything boils down to LeBron and AD, but a lot boils down to LeBron and AD.
Well, I mean, as far as just DNA and looking at the teams as a whole, you've got all four teams have basically the same core star players, like the core players that everything is built around, whether you're talking about LeBron and AD for the Lakers, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo for the Heat, no Tyler Hero, but those are still the two best players on this team. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart for the Celtics and then for Denver, you've got Jokic, Murray, Porter. Like, so in that sense, it validates a lot of what we did see in 2020. As far as what I think you can look for the commonalities in the 2020 team versus the one that is in the Western Conference Finals now for the Lakers, obviously, like you said, the only literal commonalities are LeBron and AD. But what I think you saw similarly is very well-suited complementary pieces on both teams. They're not exactly the same type of complementary pieces because the 2020 team, LeBron and AD were, you know, 3 seasons younger. LeBron had been coming off, and AD had been coming off long off seasons because neither made the playoffs, and they had 3 months off because of a pandemic. You saw the two of them be able to play at like superstar production levels, game in, game out. Uh-huh. Assuming they stayed healthy, you did not need to worry about that at all. And the players surrounding them were largely just 3-and-D players and size options in Dwight or JaVale or Markieff Morris, if you wanted to get something in between. But that's really what it was. It was a lot of outside shooting and then really just defense and defensive options. This group, because, you know, LeBron is, you know, we saw game 6 closing out the Warriors, still capable of wreaking havoc, but age has caught up to him in certain respects. Attrition has caught up to him in certain respects, as it would for any player of LeBron's mileage and this many years in the league. This year, I think the role players are more skill players around them. Like D'Angelo Russell is more capable as a scorer and a facilitator than any of the wings surrounding LeBron and AD that year. Same with Austin Reeves. Same with Dennis Schroeder. Rui Hachimura. Like, now with Lonnie in the rotation, the Lakers have 7 guys who can create their own shot. That's unusual. Like, they can't all do it at the level of LeBron or AD, but LeBron, AD, Schroeder, D'Lo, Austin Reeves, Lonnie, Rui, those are 7 guys who can create their own shot at an above average NBA level. You don't see that a lot in a roster. And I think that speaks to, in certain ways, where LeBron and AD are in their careers right now. You know, and in the meantime, the defensive integrity has still stayed there. But that's what I think is some of the difference. Like, you don't rely, or you're not as dependent on LeBron and AD to provide all of the scoring now as you were in 2020.
Which is probably a good thing. It's like you said, yes. LeBron particularly is just a different player now.
Yeah.
When you talk about sort of the guys who have overcome, you know, Anthony Davis has been an up and down year, and Russell was, I think, the most prominent player in that, because he's going to want a lot of money in the offseason. Like, are you going to want to pay him $23, $24 million? Well, maybe not if he disappears in the playoffs. And he has shown the value to a team that is built around LeBron and AD, where you need somebody else to pick up scoring. And you wouldn't expect him to be. He's going to have clunkers because every player.
Is.
I mean, look, Joel Embiid was terrible in game 7. James Harden was terrible in game 7. Every player has clunkers. And so Russell wouldn't be being paid at the level where you'd expect him to be perfect every night. But he's shown that for this team, like, you need somebody who can do what he's doing. If not him, it's got to be someone, and I don't know where they'd have access to it. And so he's come through. And, like, you know, the Reeves bouncing back. When they made these trades, the thing that was always tricky to me was, what is the remaining upside? Like, how good can they get and how quickly? And the answer seems to be very good and really quickly. But as I try to figure out, like you, would I pick the Lakers in this series, even though I absolutely 100% think they can win? Part of my formulation is, I'm still not sure we've seen you know, if they don't have another 6 or 7% of growth, that could even come out over the course of the next 4 to 7 games.
Well, it's funny you say that. Like, one of the things that I think is interesting in comparing the 2020 team that won the championship and what faced the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals versus this team that's about to face the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals, like, LeBron is not expected to carry the team now in the same way he was in 2020, in part because I don't think he can do it on a game-in, game-out basis. Just summon it, turn it on whenever the hell he wants. Like, he's, again, 38. We know he's playing through a foot injury. You know, that if it were not for the LeBron James of feet, he'd be, you know, out on the shelf recovering from surgery, which still could happen this offseason. But because of the skill players that are around LeBron right now and Anthony Davis playing for the most part, you know, quite well on both ends of the floor throughout the playoffs, LeBron is absolutely capable of picking his spots judiciously. And if the Lakers play at a level where you need him to take you home in the fourth, or if it's a closeout game and it's really important that you close it out on this night, LeBron is still capable of summoning up those nights, I think, at will. Like, he's still, I think, capable of rationing out the energy and the raw production and sort of mapping out when he thinks, okay, this is the night, this is the quarter, the half, whatever, that I got to do it. I think he's still capable of doing that. And the good news is there are enough skill players around him now that he doesn't have to be thinking about it on a four-quarter game-by-game basis.
This series is going to be so interesting. We're going to get much deeper into, you know, individual matchups and previews and all that kind of stuff on Tuesday's show with the Locked On Nuggets guys. But I do want to start thinking about the series by looking at what you think the starting lineup is going to look like. So we'll get to that next. All right. So Darvin Ham, who had a really good series against the Warriors, there was, even by, you know, nervous playoff Lakers fan standards, there was a lot less complaining about Darvin than there normally is. I mean, he made a move putting Dennis Schroeder in the starting lineup for game six. It paid off. Lakers got off to a great start and essentially controlled that game throughout. I don't think you can go three guards against Denver. They're too big. Mm-hmm. Would you expect Vanderbilt to be back in the starting lineup, or you think it could be Hachimura?
Yeah, I was thinking about this because I agree with you. First of all, Schroeder's going to be going back to the bench. I mean, KCP by two guard standards is not small. And then you get to Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, Jokic. They're just too big and too athletic for the Lakers to go with a three-guard lineup. The pluses with Rui obviously would be having a starting five where you have to guard everybody and putting Denver's defense on their toes that way. The minuses are obviously you're removing some of that scoring punch from the bench. Vanderbilt, though, back in the starting lineup, even if you have to go back to that issue where he's ignored and you feel in certain respects like you're playing 4-on-5 offensively, between Porter, Gordon, and Murray, that is a lot of switchability and versatility and a lot of different looks that you can use Vanderbilt against three different and very dynamic players. And I wonder if the trade-off with that versatility, I'm guessing they'd go back to Vanderbilt, but I can see an argument either way. I don't think it's an obvious solution in either case. The good news is I don't think either is a bad solution either.
No, and I think it wouldn't shock me if we saw that spot move a lot over the course of the series. You know, Denver is a really difficult team to match up with. And just because, again, they have, you know, Michael Porter Jr. is 6'10". Like, I'm not sure people sort of understand or remember how big he is. And he doesn't necessarily, he's not like he's pounding people down low, but he's a really big dude.
Yeah. He's like a poor man's Durant. You know, he's really tall. He's got that really fast release in his shot. And when he gets rolling, he can start to bury you. I mean, you know, they're going to look to attack him defensively. Like they're going to start looking to, I'm sure, target him and Murray the way you started seeing LeBron mercilessly do it to Steph as the Warriors series went along. But I would be willing to book it. There will be one or two games where Porter goes on a heater.
Well, and that's what makes them. So it's like with the Lakers when D'Angelo goes off for 28. It's like if you're still getting the stuff from everybody else and D'Angelo gives you 28 or Reeves gives you 26 or something, it's like that's tough because Murray is still, you know, again, he's gotten much better as the season went along.
He's been good in these playoffs. He's looked really good. He's played
really nicely in the playoffs. And Jokic was 35-10 in the last series. Again, we'll get to some of the specifics about matchups and things to look for in defense and this and that and whatever. I'm always interested in the way the moving parts, like which, and this happened a lot on the way in 2020, like Dwight plays a lot. Dwight doesn't play at all. It's like Dwight was kind of one of those pivot guys for it depends on the matchup. It depends on the game. It depends on the series. And what I think the Lakers have found is a pretty good runway, pretty good feel and sense for who's going to slide it into those spaces, who's going to slide out, and everybody being okay with it. You know, in the games where Russell has sat late because Lonnie was playing really well, not a problem. Like everybody, they're playing so well that and they move so deep, and everybody, I feel like, even in the, not to get all like youth sports here, but like I feel like everybody feels like they really are contributing to something.
Yeah.
You know, even Troy Brown, who got essentially yanked from the rotation, still had moments in the first round where he was extremely useful.
Yeah.
And so everybody's, I think, feels like they're involved in what they're doing, and that is in part due to the buy-in for the length of the season. And that is something that you can point to Darvin and say he's done a really good job.
Yeah. One last thing I was thinking about in terms of the rotation and, you know, the moves Darvin's going to make. The Nuggets are a lot like the Lakers in that they've had no backup center. Like their 8-man rotation does not include old friend Thomas Bryant or older friend DeAndre Jordan or, I don't know, mild acquaintance Zeke Nnaji.
I see what you did there, old friend DeAndre Jordan. It works on two levels, Andy.
Yes, yes. And unless foul trouble becomes an issue for AD, like I think Ham's inclination to just go with LeBron or Rui as the backup five can work against Denver. And there can be an opportunity to really mirror AD's minutes with Jokic's. Like, I think you could still see Wenyen Gabriel out there occasionally, like to give AD a rest, or obviously if there's foul trouble. But Denver's 3 through 5 in the starting lineup is big, and Jokic is huge. So you think so much about what do you do with that center spot defensively, because Jokic is so big and, you know, a lot of times just impossible to slow down. And he's the straw that stirs the whole thing. But I don't actually think Denver's overall size is going to be an issue for the Lakers. Again, unless there's extreme foul trouble going on, something like that.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a really interesting series, for sure. all right. So for the everydayer, something to look forward to, really the everybody should look forward to Tuesday's episode. We're going to break this thing down with the Locked On Nuggets guys, Adam Mares and Matt Moore from that show will be joining us. A big crossover preview episode of the Western Conference Finals. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show. And I mean, I look the same. I just don't sound right. hang out with a bunch of Lakers fans. And get ready for what should be a real barn burner on Tuesday. The game is going to be much more exciting than my ability to speak of it in this way. And hopefully, Andy, I'll be able to talk tomorrow, but we'll see.